1995 Sun Sound Symposium presents session number 164, The Structural Implications of Home Teaching and Visiting Teaching by Laura Hamblin.
At Utah Valley State College. She's the poetry editor of Exponent 2, and she has one son, Blake, and through conversations we've had on the phone, she has a son who's gaining strength every day and a sense of humor and dealing with the life that he's going through, being a teenager in Utah. And she has a dog named Jerry Rice. In 2 days, she'll be moving to Las Vegas, where she'll be teaching poetry and creative writing at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Excuse me. She considers herself experienced in home teaching and visiting teaching because she has been home taught her entire life and has been a visiting teacher and has been visit-taught for the last 20 years. The title of her paper is The Structural and Political Implications of Home Teaching and Visiting Teaching. And after Dr. Hamblin is finished, there will be time for some questions.
Thank you, Jerry. Did you all receive the questionnaire as you came in the door? Okay, everyone's got one. If you would fill that out, and then I could collect them afterwards, it would be helpful. The structural and political implications of home teaching and visiting teaching. Home teaching and visiting teaching are the longstanding and institutionalized means by which the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints maintains contact with its members and assesses and attempts to meet its members' needs both spiritually and temporally. Such visiting is traditionally viewed by church members as being an act of charity. In James 1:27, we read, "Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction and to keep himself unspotted from the world." However, the nature of home teaching and visiting teaching, in addition to being an attempt at charity, is a manifestation of the power structure found in the church with its inherent inequalities and sexist attitudes. In my paper, I will analyze the objectives of home teaching and visiting teaching, the means each calling has for achieving its objectives, and the political implications which are found in both the objectives and the means. When I use the term political, I refer to the structure of power found among groups of people. Such power enables individuals choice and the right to exercise free will. Hence, when I speak of political implications, I am speaking of what is implied in the relationship of power that exists between individuals, and the way in which that power is achieved, maintained, and utilized. When I use the term sexist, I refer to an incident, attitude, or individual which distinguishes one's gender when, in fact, one's gender is irrelevant to the situation. I'm not focusing on home teaching and visiting teaching because they are a unique manifestation of the imbalance of power and inherent sexist attitudes. They are not. I focus on them because they are one manifestation of the imbalance of political power that is to be found. Other manifestations of the imbalance of power include the following, and this is simply a brief, superficial list. 1. The difference in the amount of money from ward budgets that is used on young men's versus young women's programs, particularly when considering scouting. 2. The fact that worthy young women cannot serve missions until the age of 21. While young men, who mature less quickly than women, are allowed to serve at age 19. 3. The fact that young women are not trained to visit teach, but young men are trained to home teach. 4. The fact that women's organizations don't have full control over their funds. 5. The fact that young women are discouraged from taking out their endowments before being sealed or going on a mission. 6. The seating arrangement at various temple rites, including weddings. 7. The fact that the church sponsors women's conferences, but not men's conferences. And 8, the fact that a woman in a bishop's court can never be judged by her peers. Again, none of these examples is a startlingly unique example. They are all, like the difference between home teaching and visiting teaching, manifestations of the same problem, from which I have chosen to focus on home teaching and visiting teaching because they touch all LDS people. To more fully understand the objectives and the means of home teaching and visiting teaching, and in an attempt to analyze how members actually perceive the programs, I begin with an informal representative survey which I conducted of contemporary church members. Next, I review an historical outline of the programs to compare with the members' perceptions. And finally, I conclude with suggestions of the political implications found in the programs. You all have a copy of the survey, which I handed out, and I won't read over those questions, the five questions, and they deal with the individual's understanding of home teaching and visiting teaching. I passed out the questionnaire to the Edgemont Fifth Ward Relief Societies and Priesthood Quorums in Provo, Utah. The employed memberships of the Edgemont Fifth Ward are mostly professional people, with a good number of them teaching at Brigham Young University. 49 people responded. And I've listed a sampling of their responses. I'm not going to give you all 49 responses. You're going, thank goodness. The answers are varied from the ridiculous to the predictable, mundane, and rhetorical, to the thoughtful and the poignant. I include representative answers from each type of the answers because I believe that all of the answers tell us something about ourselves. The answers to the first question, what is the job or purpose of our home teacher, are as follows. The first is from a female, age 70, who said, to watch over family and help take care of their needs, report specific needs, give a lesson. Second, from a female, age 40, she said, to provide the priesthood contact with all members and non-members, if possible, in the ward area. My response to that is, here we have home teaching perceived as a means of missionary work, which, not sure I was surprised. Three, a male, age 67, said, to watch over families assigned in the ward and to support the head of the family in teaching and nurturing family members. I then ask, why is only the head of the family nurtured and supported? Why aren't all members of the family seen as needing support in their representative positions? Four, a female age 62 said, represent the bishop, report any family needs or problem, help the family when there is a need, befriend family members, discuss a lesson. Five, a female age 47 said, to love, support, and counsel with, he should be one of the first people you want to call when you need help. Six, a male age 40 said, to be a friend to those who you visit more than to teach, to be a friend more than to teach, and to help. Seventh, a male age 63 said, to be a liaison between the family and the bishop, to give a spiritual message, specifically the First President's message found in the Ensign. Eighth, a female age 27 said, to be an on-call exorcist or health blessing giver if you can't afford a doctor. It's funny. Maybe it's not funny. Okay, obviously, this is a rather flippant answer aimed in a mildly caustic way at being humorous. And I think it's helpful to note that Freud said that jokes relieve or dissipate our anxiety, which usually has to do with power, as jokes ultimately subvert authority. So I believe even in this answer, we see something going on which is much stronger than just a funny response. Point nine, a male, age 57, said, to help the father, parenthesis, head of family, assume and fulfill his role as patriarch of the family. My response is, this answer, of course, assumes that the head of the family is a father, when in reality a good portion of households are headed by single women. Tenth, a male, age 17, said, visit, help out, serve, make sure people don't feel lonely, bring the priesthood into the home. 11th, this person didn't record age or sex. Friendshipping, have a gospel discussion with fellow members of the church. 12th, a female age 26 said, it is a priesthood calling to act as a liaison between the bishop and ward members. Ideally, the home teacher is in close contact with the family and can anticipate needs or special problems. It is a way to take care of individuals in such a large organization, but it has become institutionalized and formulated to the point of usually missing the mark entirely. All right, those are the representatives I gave for the first question. The answers to the second question, what is the job or purpose of a visiting teaching, are as follows. Four of the respondents didn't fill out any answers on the visiting teaching. That's almost one-fourth of them. I don't know whether they didn't know the answer or didn't feel that it was important. Nine, one-tenth of the respondents, said that the job was the same as a home teacher, and one said he didn't know. One, a female age 70, said, to develop relationship of love and trust, help when need, and report special problems to the Relief Society president. My response is, why are women perceived as uniquely needing relationships of trust while men are not? Are women less trustful or loving? Do they have reason to be suspicious, such that they need a special relationship to develop trust? Two, a female age 49 said, to provide contact with the Sisterhood of the Ward area. It's another way for the bishop to get news through the Relief Society president. My response is, isn't this a duplication of information if the bishop already gets information from the home teachers? 3. Amel, age 69, said, for sisterhood in the church to become manifest, to build a bond of devotion, to emphasize the majesty of motherhood and womanhood. My question is, why is there a need for motherhood to have its majesty emphasized? Has it been overrated? Underrated? Do we not really believe in the majesty of motherhood such that we need people called specifically to emphasize its majesty? I suggest that if women and mothers in the church really had power and the associated dignity and respect that accompanies power, it would seem that the need to emphasize the majesty of motherhood would be superfluous. 4. A male, age 67, said, to visit the assigned sisters in the ward to provide spiritual and other support for the mother who provides much of the training, nurturing, and understanding counsel for children and husband. I then ask, is the father not nurturing and understanding? 5. A female, age 62, said, to represent the Relief Society president, report any problems or needs, be a special friend to the sister, develop a rapport with the sister, share gospel thoughts and ideas, discuss a lesson. A female, age 47, said, same as above or same as home teaching, certainly to be an excellent listener. I then ask, do home teachers not need to be excellent listeners? Why are visiting teachers perceived as being excellent listeners, but that not a unique quality of a home teacher? The 7th response was from a male, age 63, who said, to establish a sisterhood in the ward. It gives a spiritual message to give women a different channel of communicating with ward leadership. I then ask, why do women need a different channel? Is the channel of home teaching not getting the correct information across? Point 8, a female, age 26, said, to make sure the individual needs of women are being met, to provide an atmosphere in which women can communicate freely together. This implies that freedom is not normally permissible. And I suggest that if women had power, their needs would be met, either by themselves or by the community, which truly respected and respond would respect and respond to them. Point 19 is from a female, age 63, who said, to provide women with a confidant. I suggest that the need for a confidant is related to the lack of power. People who are in positions of true power are free to express dissatisfactions or concerns openly. They are given a voice, and their voice is respected to the degree that people listen to and respond to their voice. Why are men not perceived as needing confidants? Point 10. A male, age 46, said, much the same as home teaching, but primarily for the women of the home. And I ask, does this suggest that home teachers are failing to meet the needs of women in the home? Because we had previously had the opinion that home teachers were there for the family. And women are members of the family, right. Okay. 11th point, a male, age 71, said, for emphasis on mother and children. I then ask, why do women and children need an emphasis while men do not? Is not this a manifestation of the inequality of power? And additionally, why are women perceived of as being in a group with children who are sub-adult? Point 12, no sex or age was recorded for this response. Traditionally, to help sisters in their good work as mothers and helpmates working with husband. My response is, why then do men not need a special visitor to help them in their good work as fathers and helpmates working with their wives? In addition, this assumes that being a woman is equivalent to being a mother and a wife, which is not necessarily the case. Point 13, a male, age 63, said, to have the sister know that she is important and loved by the Lord and his servants, to have someone share spiritual and temporal needs. Again, I ask, why do sisters have a special need to, quote, know they are loved and important, end quote? If they were truly perceived as being important and loved, then they would be secure in these feelings, as secure as men appear to be, inasmuch as there is no unique program in the church which emphasizes the importance and lovableness of men, unless we count the entire organization as doing so. Point 14, a male, age 45, said, cheer up the sisters. I ask, why are the sisters uniquely down, such that they need cheering up? And why is there no need to cheer up the brothers? Point 15. This was just a female who simply said she was old. to learn to know and love their women visited so that they feel accepted, included, and sincerely considered important, to be a friend in a real sense, to deliver the gospel message. Again, this answer assumes that women don't feel accepted, included, or important. If they were given true power and respect, they would feel accepted, included, and important. And I suggest that we cannot make individuals feel accepted and included and important unless we fully accept and include them, as opposed to excluding and marginalizing them, as is now often done in the organization of the church. Now, obviously, the majority of the respondents saw similarity in the objectives of home teaching and visiting teaching programs, specifically to fellowship, to teach, to assess and meet the needs, to provide the bishop with information. But the differences in the understanding that the people polled had of these two positions highlight the attitudes about women that many churchholders members hold. From the above responses, one might conclude that members of the church do not perceive men and women as being equal or as having equal needs, thus reflecting an imbalance of power. And so we move on to the third and fourth questions that, and I won't read through those since you all have a copy of those. I found these responses the most enlightening. 6 people said they didn't know why the difference existed, and 2 didn't give any answers. Okay, these are great. Here you go. Number 1, a male, age 67, said, visiting teaching is focused on Relief Society members to provide added contact and support. It's a good program, but it needs update for our modern culture. 2nd is from a male, age 40, and he said, I don't know. It has to go back to the decision or guidance of our leaders that we have to accept, and that's a very personal thing. I have always said that a woman does a better job anyway. Men are weaker and need the help. Now, this type of cliche response I find most offensive on a couple of levels. First, to, quote, elevate women above men is simply another way of keeping them from being fully human. It places twice the responsibility on one individual. It excuses men for being irresponsible before an effort at responsibility is even made. I see this attitude as simply another type of exercise of power where the person who is in a position of true power or choice has the option of relieving himself of the responsibility at the expense of the other person who does not have the power to say, I refuse the double duty you are giving me. You be responsible for yourself. Also, if we really believe that men are, quote, weaker and need the help, it would make no sense to have the organization led by the weaker members. That would result in having a weaker organization. I do not believe that men are weaker and are in need of help. I believe that we tell ourselves this in order to perpetuate the power structure that is in place. But the means of perpetuating the structure are those of a lie, which is always harmful. The third response is by a male, age 45, who said, the purpose is different. One is a priesthood function with greater responsibility. Here we have a direct acknowledgement of the inequality of the system, with men giving positions of true responsibility and women giving positions of token responsibility. Point 4, from a male, age 64. He said, the priesthood is responsible for the whole family. The Relief Society is responsible for each sister. The Relief Society usually does a better job of visiting teaching than the priesthood does of home teaching. And my response, this is another expression of the illogical and pejorative attitude that, quote, women are better, and that's why they're given the lesser job. Point 5. Thank you for thinking that's funny. You guys got to liven up a little bit here, okay? Pretty stern. Point 5, male, age 62, said, usually women can relate better to women on a variety of topics, gospel-related or not. Priesthood blessings, of course, come through those holding the priesthood, but often it is the sisters who first comprehend the needs, especially of other women. My response is, here we have another logical fallacy. If women are the first to comprehend the needs, then why don't they work with the whole family and save everyone a lot of time? Point 6, a male, age 69, said, women need their own opportunity for leadership. Women have special affinity to other women. Men can solve problems such as unplugging a drain and administration of the sick. Women, the lovely things in life. A wonderful division of labor. One's socialization determines how one sees things, such as values, perspectives, points of view towards programs, activities, whether in the family, politics, and the church. A convert could come to the church, see such separation, could conclude that perhaps women are segregated in Relief Society or visiting teaching, and view that negatively, or could see it as an opportunity for women to serve, develop sisterhood, and verify the qualities that are so marvelously feminine. My socialization and research, parentheses, empirical research, views it as a wonderful, inspired organization fulfilling the needs of the members of the church. That was a long response, and I have the impression that the person responded as a social scientist because of the empirical research he mentioned he had done. My response to this is, if men are really better at, quote, unplugging drains, and women are really better at, quote, the lovely things in life, perhaps it is because we tell ourselves it is so, and then act accordingly. Our men and our women could be re-socialized so that women could also unplug drains and men could also be sensitive to the lovely things in life. Point 7. This is from a male. He didn't record his age. There's a need to have contact with the women without family present. Why? I ask. If women had true power within the family, they would feel free to express any concern, thus eliminating the need for a special contact. Why do we not perceive that men have a need to have contact without their families present? Point 8. A male aged 63 said, apparently, that's the way the Lord would have it done. I believe this view expressed, the view expressed in this answer is responsible for a lack of continued revelation, period. It's very disturbing for me. Point 9. A male aged 75 said, men hold the priesthood. One-on-one is more effective in heart-to-heart communications than a discussion with a whole family. Women are more caring and are more aware of problems. Again, I ask, if this is the case, then why don't women work with the entire family? Point 10, a male age 54 said, the priesthood is responsible for the family to report back to the bishop through the high priest or elders leader. The women report to the Relief Society president or sisters for a double check on them. The gospel expects the brethren to be the family leaders with support of the sisters as a double check and extended friendship. I then ask, why do women need a double check? Especially if they are so righteous in the first place. Also, this response disallows for families that are headed by single women. Point 11 is by a male age 72 who said, we need more than one superficial contact per month, friendship. Look for ways to serve. Point 12 is a male age 47 who said, home teaching brings the priesthood into the home. Visiting teaching helps the wife communicate with other women and to be able to share more emotional and spiritual feelings. I then ask, why aren't home teachers, as part of the priesthood, sharing emotional and spiritual feelings? Point 13, a male age 57 said, patriarch is a priesthood calling taught by someone holding the priesthood. Perhaps women understand the role and responsibility of a mother more than a man does. Sometimes we make more of gender issues, and he spelled gender, G-E-N-E-R, gender issues, as it applies to the family than we should. I'm not sure here what this respondent is getting at, whether he's saying that the church makes too much of gender differences or whether the questionnaire is making too much of gender differences. I don't know how to understand that. Pardon me?
I've got the questionnaire.
Point 14, a male age, 45. Home teaching is a bishop representative, visiting teaching a social and spiritual contact. I then ask, is the bishop's representative not a social and spiritual contact? 15, a female who's old said, a man can help or relate to the whole family. A visiting teacher can be a sounding board for the members, someone to pour out your heart to. But as the program now is, only women get someone to pour their heart out to. Point 16, a female age 26 said, I'm not sure why, but I've never felt comfortable about it. I've never liked home teaching except for the times it was done by couples to families. I've never cared for a visiting teacher. It seems too formulated also. But I've also had personal access to good friends, and so I haven't felt the need for a visiting teacher. I've heard of many women who love it. The more we try to form... Listen to this carefully. I think this is great. The more we try to make formulas to gain spiritual access and insights, the further we get from the goal. It appears to me that we try to institutionalize the gospel principles, creating jobs, obligations, filling out records, and turning the gospel into a business rather than a way of life. I think that this is done with the intent to help people live the gospel, but I don't think it works all that well. I don't know what the answer is, this respondent said. I suppose more freedom and validating the individual's relationship with God and a right to personal revelation. Now, this woman's comment, I felt, was very insightful, and it reminds me of what the psychotherapist Rollo May said of institutions. Listen to this. This is the frantic quality with which we pursue technique as our way to salvation is in direct proportion to the degree to which we have lost sight of the salvation we are seeking. Point 17, a male age 63 said, practically, the missions are different. It may also reflect the view that women don't work during the day, although the view is largely inaccurate. Point 18, female age 63 said, there's too much duplication of effort for people who are too busy. Point 19, a female age 30 said, the whole purpose of the church organization is to provide a safe place for women and children. Often men get caught up in daily cares and forget their first purpose and neglect the wife and children for a spell. It is hoped that other women would notice the needs of a specific woman and her children and bring these needs to the attention of others who would guide the man's attention back to the family. Men often do not see needs. My response is, I was never aware that the whole purpose of the church was to make a safe place for women and children. I always thought it was to bring people to the salvation which Christ offers. Point 20. A female, age 60, said, there are various needs of a family, and sometimes the women have personal needs and need encouragement in raising and caring for a family, and older women need companionship of their sisters. And this seems to me to be a very legitimate need in older people who may not have family or spouse. Point 21, and I'm almost done with these points, so hang on. A female, age 83, said, a single man or woman needs to have, at many times, a one-on-one relationship with another of the same sex for understanding. By the same token, they each need a person of the opposite sex to give balance and perspective. Men would never think of the needs of others if not required to do so and encouraged by women. And my response is, but the system doesn't allow for single men to visit with the opposite sex. Point 22, a male age 56 said, the Lord wants the program set up in this manner. Each program is unique and comprehensive in its scope, and if properly executed, will give an accurate evaluation of the spiritual and temporal condition of 8 million individuals in the church. Well, I have a difficult time agreeing with this line of thought. I'm not sure that any program has accurately evaluated my spiritual or temporal needs, in great part because the majority of the people in the organization don't want to hear my needs, and so they quickly attempt in various ways to silence me. And finally, the 23rd point, a female age 70 said, it's a type of help. The type of help rendered is different. Visiting teachers have more intimate relationship. Women's needs are different from those of family or men. And again, I ask, what are those needs? And why are they different from anyone else's needs? Don't men need intimate relationships? Now that we've looked at a representative sample of members' attitudes toward home teaching and visiting teaching, let's look briefly at the history of each program. Today, home teaching typically is done by an adolescent male with the priesthood office of a teacher or a priest and a mentor-like senior companion who is either an elder or high priest. And in the Doctrine and Covenants, section 20, we're given the specific offices of the teacher and the priest. I won't read the teachers because it does, I mean, I had the whole list. I'm not going to read it. My point is that nowhere does it specify that the teacher's responsibility is to teach the families in the homes. But the priest does specify to preach, teach, expound, exhort, and baptize, and administer the sacrament, and visit the house of each member and exhort them to pray vocally and in secret and to attend all family duties. In understanding the programs, it is of value to remember that historically the offices of the priesthood were not age-specific duties so much as they were office-specific callings. It was not the case that all boys of a specific age were given a specific priesthood. The institutionalization of the offices of the priesthood occurred during what is known as the priesthood reform movement of 1908 to 1922. During this period, under the direction of President Joseph F. Smith, a specially called General Priesthood Correlation Committee instituted a church-wide reformation reorganization plan. Prior to that time, the priesthood quorums lacked general direction. And here I'm giving you a quote from William Hartley's article, The Priesthood Reform Movement of 1908 to 1922. He said, some wards had no deacons and many no priests, and it was common for older men to perform Aaronic priesthood functions. Some bishops would not ordain their young men to a particular office until there were sufficient numbers to make a quorum, and most quorums were traditionally adjourned during the summer months. Isn't that wild? In the 76th annual conference report, J. Golden Kimball bluntly addressed the unsatisfactory state of the priesthood quorums by comparing them with the church auxiliaries. And he said, the priesthood quorums are apparently weary and well-doing, and the officers and members seem to think that their organizations can run themselves. They become lax in their work and let their loose hold, while the auxiliary organizations have taken the right way. The priesthood quorum stand by, looking on awestruck. In an effort to correct the situation, Joseph F. Smith outlined a more organized priesthood program with the hopes that every council of the priesthood in the church, and this is a direct quote from the 76 conference report, every council of the priesthood of the church will understand its duty, will assume its own responsibility, will magnify its calling, and fulfill its place in the church, so that every need may be met and satisfied through the regular organization of the priesthood. Now, a big part of the movement of the Correlation Committee was headed by David O. McKay, and was to revive. And the big part of the movement was to revive the lesser priesthood. This is a direct quote. Although there were as many boys between the ages of 15 and 18 in 1912 as between the ages of 12 and 15, there were but 9,300 teachers compared to 20,255 deacons. William Hartley also suggests that a primary cause of this situation was a pervasive lack of dignity and importance accorded to the callings of teachers and priests. Hence, a vigorous campaign was made to make the teachers and priest quorums of importance in the ward. According to James B. Allen and Glenn M. Leonard, the Aaronic priesthood was also revitalized in an effort to stimulate young men to greater activity and more effectively train them as leaders. In the October 1906 General Conference, President Francis M. Lyman of the Council of the Twelve laid out specific procedures. At that point, he said, all worthy boys are to be ordained at age 12 and then serve for 3 years in each Aaronic priesthood office. In this spirit, the church leaders began more clearly to identify their duties for each office. The principles with which the Correlation Committee initiated would be later reemphasized with the implementation of the priesthood correlation of the 1960s. Thus, we see that the main significance of the correlation program had in the terms of the topic of my paper included an establishment of definite age groups for each Aaronic priesthood office and the outlining of specific duties for deacons, teachers, and priests, with the accompanying importance of each office recognized. Not until this time was the duty of the teacher specifically to assign in home teaching, which was then called ward teaching. Now, in the current Melchizedek Priesthood Leadership Handbook, which we often refer to as the Bishop's Handbook, the responsibility of a home teacher and the manner in which the home teacher carries out the responsibility is outlined. Home teachers represent the Lord, the Bishop, and the group or quorum leader. Through home teachers, each ward member is regularly visited by a representative of the ward leaders. In turn, home teachers can give ward leaders important information about members' needs. Home teachers are the church's first source of help to the church members. Home teachers support and serve the members they visit. They nurture the friendship and respect of these members, showing genuine concern and interest for each of them. They become acquainted with each member's interests, abilities, challenges, and needs, and they also recognize special events in the members' lives. In the handbook, the structure of home teaching is also outlined, and I'll just read you point 5 and point 7. Point 5 says that teachers and priests of the Aaronic priesthood are called as home teacher junior companions. And point 11 says, now this is very interesting, selectively, as approved by the bishop, the wife of an active, mature high priest or elder may accompany him on his home teaching visits. Couples may report these visits as both a home teaching and a visiting teaching need. Well, this qualifier troubles me a little bit. The necessary maturity of the high priest or elder who may be teaching with his spouse as a companion is emphasized here. And I ask, why is it more critical for a man teaching with a woman to be particularly mature, more so than a man teaching with an adolescent? In addition, does this suggest that the organization sees an adolescent male as being more mature or easier to work with than an adult female? And why is the man's maturity rather than the woman's maturity of concern here? Now let's look at the history of visiting teaching. The history is also almost as old as the LDS Church itself. The system of visiting teaching was organized in the Relief Society's second year in 1843. As recorded in the church published A Centenary of Relief Society, the original committee of 16 visiting teachers was appointed, quote, to search out the poor and suffering, to call upon the rich for aid, and thus far as possible, to relieve the wants of all. The twofold function of this necessary committee is to, listen to this, ascertain the conditions of the families visited, did not specify women, ascertain the conditions of the families visited, and to accept contributions for charitable purposes. And the quote that I'm reading from the Centenary of Relief Society, said, this purpose has been performed by visiting teachers ever since. Of course, that's not the case. Since the time of the Correlation Committee, Deacons have gathered the charitable contributions in the form of fast offerings, and home teachers now visit the families as opposed to visiting teachers. And now I'm back to the quote. This plan provides that every Latter-day Saint family in every branch of the church, irrespective of station or wealth, be visited once a month by two Relief Society women, the visiting teachers, who carry greetings and a message from the society to each home. The point I wish to emphasize here is that originally, the visiting teachers, although called block teachers, visited each family, not simply the adult woman of the family. Joseph Fielding Smith, in Essentials for Church History, states, quote, "A special feature of the work of Relief Society is monthly visits by teachers to all Latter-day Saint homes," end quote. Again, the distinction was for teachers to visit a home, not simply the woman of the home. Thus, it would seem that some of the visiting teachers' original responsibilities have been given to home teachers and deacons. In the Contemporary Relief Society Handbook, the work of visiting teaching is outlined as a branch of the Welfare Compassionate Service, and the manual specifies, "The work of Relief Society in seeking out and caring for the poor and needy is largely carried out through visiting teaching. This selfless service within a loving sisterhood can bring both spiritual blessings, which can contribute to perfecting the saints, helping them become worthy of receiving saving ordinances and making binding covenants." And then the next paragraph says, "With priesthood direction," I emphasize that, "with priesthood direction, the Relief Society president assigns sisters to contact other sisters," and I make that emphasis too, "regularly by visiting," listen to this, "making a telephone call, sending a letter, or by other means." Apparently, the church today does not see visiting teaching as being as important as home teaching, as the visiting teaching system allows for token visits in the form of a call or a letter, suggesting that the influence of the women is not as crucial as the influence of the men. From the review of the history of home teaching and visiting teaching and the survey of the perceptions of the church members that church members have of the programs, I've drawn the following conclusions. Number one, an inequality of power does exist in both in the formally organized programs and in the attitudes that members have towards the programs and towards individuals participating in the programs. Point two, the inequalities place women in a subservient position where they are either not able to make real contributions to the whole of the church or where they are perceived as not being able to make real contributions. Three, the programs perpetuate the inequalities and attitudes. Four, the inequalities and attitudes perpetuate the programs. Five, being relegated to an auxiliary program rather than being an inherent part inherent and indispensable part of the program may result in women and men perceiving women's contributions as being secondary. Perhaps this is part of the reason why there are so many problems with Mormon women and depression. Six, revelation is a social construct. We only receive answers to those questions we ask, and our readiness to ask a specific question is in part a variable of our political standing. Seven, the church's organization is not, nor has been, stagnant. It has evolved and will continue to evolve to meet the contemporary needs of its members. If the LDS church is to be representative of a living gospel, it must experience change and growth, both with its members and its organizations. My suggestion for an improvement in the program would be to have spouses teach families. By doing so, we could achieve several positive ends. Number one, the woman would be given a position of equal importance and power in having a voice within the system. We would begin to see that women's perspective is equally valid to those of the adolescent and older male. Two, it is likely that the respect, sense of belonging, and importance that members perceive women are in need of could, to some degree, be achieved by giving women a position of importance which is central to the church and its overall function. Three, by having spouses teach families, I believe that the teaching and friendshipping would be more natural, less artificial, and less superficial. How wonderful it would be for two families to genuinely be there for each other. Instead of asking, "Is there anything we can do for you?" as is so typically asked, and then responded to with a "No, everything is fine." At the end of the visiting couple could invite the family to go on a hike with their family, could show up for a ball game of the child of the family they are visiting. They could have the family over for a dinner or a movie. And in these expanded gestures of friendship, if there are special needs for one-on-one confidences between women or men, the opening up would be more natural and less stilted. In addition, Special arrangements could be made for single men and women where they could pair up with visiting companions in any number of ways. One man and one woman, which I'm not sure the church would condone. Two men and one woman, two women and one man, whatever. Four, an additional advantage of having spouses teach families would be that there would be less duplication of work. As the program now stands, women get taught twice a month, once by home teachers and once by visiting teachers. But men and other family members get taught only once a month. The bishop then receives two reports on each family, one from the visiting teacher and one from the home teachers. The time which would be saved in duplicate visits and in duplicate reporting could be utilized in genuine family interactions where there's an emphasis on love and service rather than on statistics. And five, I suggested that the act of the couple preparing and delivering a lesson and giving responsible service together could strengthen a couple's marriage bonds. Now, I'm not so naive as to be suggesting that home teaching and visiting teaching are the biggest problems in the church today, or that even a revision of home teaching and visiting teaching could solve our biggest problems. But I do believe that the programs and the politics inherent in the programs are problematic, and some of the problems could begin to be solved by revising the program in a gesture of love to reemphasize individuals' values, importance, and power. Thank you.
Faster than I thought. Now it's time for questions, answers. If you want to come up here so you can be heard or speak very loudly, and Laura will repeat the question into the microphone so we can all hear it.
I can speak loudly. What? After five children?
No problem. I don't have a priesthood husband.
Well, okay, then that I did not know. Nonetheless, what is your personal experience?
I haven't home taught.
You have not. All right, you have not home.
I have been a home teacher.
A home teacher.
A visiting teacher. What do I say? I've been a home visiting teacher, and I've been visit taught.
What is your personal feeling about your effectiveness as a visiting teacher?
I think it depended on the individual I was visiting. There were, you know, I've had several visits. Several individuals that I visit taught that I thought we developed very good friendships and relationships. And I think that it was a positive thing, a useful thing. And then others, I felt that it was merely statistical. I think some of that may have to do with personality differences where we didn't have a lot in common and it just didn't click. Some of it might have to do with the companion. I like visiting with women. I mean, that's not my point. I enjoy. Yes. My point is that the program devalues what I perceive women have to give to the church as a whole, not just to women, but to men also. And that it the imbalance of power, I think, is negative in so much as it makes us perceive men and women in ways which I think are unhealthy and leave the entire group less than it could be. Not at all. No, when I use the word power, I mean the ability to make a choice, having the option to make a choice, the power to exercise free will. Now, I don't perceive power. That would be an abuse of power, to control another. And I know often when we use the term power, we think, well, that's a negative thing, you know. You just bully people around with it. But no, I see it as power is the ability an individual has to exercise free will. Yes.
I haven't been a in the third generation or haven't had five children. I remember home teaching as being something very formal.
Mm-hmm.
The others had to talk to our children beforehand to make sure.
Yeah. You are going to be. I cannot be rude.
All my life, I've created an act
to make of his own greeting. Well, you know, and if we did teach as spouses and couples, then you would receive your voice. This is the paper I wrote.
I think that the children, and Sandy came in late in Chicago
It's interesting because mostly...
Your children have to be out of the home before this nice relationship.
Well, and that's interesting because in the Bishop's Handbook it specifies a mature adult. Maybe they mean mature in the terms of age as opposed to emotional maturity or spiritual maturity. But when we do see examples of couples visiting teaching, but typically it is an elderly couple, which goes together, that don't. And I think we're missing an opportunity for families to relate to families. And more genuine, you know. I mean, I think that point of the formality of the home teaching and visiting teaching is an indication of missing the mark of what we're really trying to achieve.
I remember how positively they responded. They would come home from school early, and my visiting teachers were there, and they showed an interest in them.
Yeah.
You know.
And see, women are perceived in the church, and I'm not saying they are or they aren't. I'm saying the church members, for the most part, perceive women as being very nurturing and giving and open and capable of these relationships. Well, then why aren't we utilizing that in terms of families, as opposed to just excluding them on the margin where women are? Yeah, it's a required relationship to a required friend. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And maybe we should just abolish the whole system and let people develop relationships where it makes sense.
Now, I think that, you know, if we were just to let it completely go, I'm sure there would be people who would be left out, who would fall through the cracks. And I think that, and I wouldn't mind, yeah, and there are now, so, I mean, what's new? But I think that whether or not we... However we matched up the families, whether it was by age group or for professions or living areas or children's common ages or whatnot, it seems to me that, I mean, I wouldn't mind being matched up with someone I'm already a friend with, and I wouldn't mind being matched up with someone that I didn't know. And see, if that relationship didn't really move, we could reorganize and rematch, you know. But it seems to me that within any ward, there are certainly numerous possibilities for people to genuinely be there for each other and for needs to be perceived and acted upon in ways that aren't happening now. Yeah.
What did you worry about putting couples together?
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that you would sort of come right back to the problem of the male leading off. The male is always kind of in the senior companion role. And I'm wondering if maybe another alternative would just be to have males teach males, females teach females, so you have two entirely separate spheres, so there's never a chance for one to try to take dominance of the other.
Well, I think if that dominance is going to happen within a couple's relationship, it has to do with their dynamics more so than the inherent structure of male-female relationships. And if that's a problem, I think the problem's not going to be solved by avoiding the problem. Well, we'll never have the problem if the men only teach men and the women only teach women. I think the problem is best solved by dealing with the problem. And if we have a situation where a man is dominating, if they're in relationships with a family... Maybe other people will call them on that and say, the kids will jump up and say, well, wait, what do you think of this? Or the wife can be more supportive and get the woman speaking her opinion. And, you know, I mean, there's ways that we as a community can validate the power of one individual. And if someone is usurping power from another, we can say, what? We don't accept that. You know, I mean, your opinion's good and valid and we're interested, but what's your opinion too, you know? I don't know. I don't know that... Men teaching men and women teaching women, I think that's just going to reemphasize differences where I would like to see similarities emphasize that. Yeah.
To tell you where I'm coming from, I would abandon both programs.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion. So, as women, we allow ourselves to be segregated.
Mm-hmm.
We go along and develop what they wanted to say. But as women, we had our own special lessons. We attended a meeting... where a teacher
would teach us how to give both lessons.
Lesson,
that's absurd, yeah.
And teach the lesson.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. The whole structure reemphasizes the lack of power that women have and the lack of something valid to give to the whole community. It's sad. And in a situation like yours, I'm assuming that if you're not participating, it's probably because it doesn't meet any of your needs.
Well, just a minute there.
Mm-hmm.
The Ensign does have a page for visiting teaching.
Yeah,
and
you
have in... structured program, a place for the visiting teaching leader to teach that to the sisters.
But why
did... It's not complete.
But why do the visiting teachers need to be taught how to teach the lesson, and the home teachers don't need to be taught how to teach the lesson? I'm assuming that they don't have a special visiting teaching or home teaching meeting. Because we're assumed they know how to teach. They have something important and valid to say. Or they don't have the time. Yeah.
It's the browbeat
you to do it. Mush. Yeah. Go ahead.
Another thing we have to keep in mind is the home teaching message is usually the very first read article in the end.
Yeah, and how many of you read it before you ever get your home teachers? That's redundant. Excellent point. I mean, just the format of that structure tells us about the political relationship there, which I think is scary. You have a divided column. Then, of course, there'd be a problem. Well, one's on the left column and one's on the right. No. But really.
If you're looking for nitpicking, I agree that
or,
have to
or okay, if that's too nitpicky.
Have to go to a higher level. But I think we can also get so nitpicking that we don't get the spirit inside of us of
If this is nitpicking, then you're suggesting that, it's trivial, it doesn't really mean a lot?
No, I'm not suggesting it's trivial.
Okay, whatever you mean by nitpicking, I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, whether that they have the first page or
okay,
page
if it's nitpicking, if that's a silly concern, why don't every, I mean, for those of us who don't take it as a silly concern, but take it as a legitimate concern, just to accommodate us, why don't they, every other issue, put the visiting teaching in the front and the priesthood in the back? If it's really not a big deal, why can't they give us that much?
Well, for myself, that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm. But obviously for a number of people.
I can admit with something you've said here, because I do home teaching, visiting teaching. And I told him that he can have half the time, and I would have half the time.
Well, that's interesting.
He even got to the point where he asked me, and he's a wonderful man, and I think he feels that way about me. But he says, now, do you want to be first, or should I be first? How do you feel?
Okay, this is an example, I think, of if a couple is working together, whatever type of problems when I said it could strengthen the marriage bonds, I think this is an example of how, the couple, as a couple, work out the differences and find something that works for them and where one isn't dominating. I don't know. We need a male voice. Go.
I have two quick comments. One, if my wife and I were to do our teaching together, then we'd either have to find a babysitter or inflict our free gift on somebody.
True.
I think that would be pretty impractical. But the other thing,
I don't know.
And the other comment I have, I mentioned this in Sacrament meeting a couple weeks ago, and everyone just laughed at it, and I didn't mean it to be funny. I thought it was serious. In our ward, we've been in the ward about 5 years, and every single Mother's Day, all the talks have to do with praising motherhood and praising wives and women. And every single Father's Day, and that's what made me, because this last time was really bad, the fathers are always berated and given Doctrine and Covenants 121 warnings and all this kind of stuff. And I noticed...
Oh, don't even get started on Mother's Day with me!
Well, I was talking to my wife about it, that our priesthood lessons about free teaching always emphasize being careful and making sure fathers are doing responsibilities. And my wife is in the least tight presence. She says that the way that they do it in our world anyway, the wives are talking about friendship and nice things and not about making sure women are doing their responsibilities. And I wonder if...
Well, and I wonder if the socialization, the way we teach men, the way we are assuming that they're going to be irresponsible, so they need berating, or assuming they're not, maybe that gives us leeway to be irresponsible. I mean, these attitudes, I don't know which comes first, the chicken or the egg, the attitude or the action, but I see it as a big problem. I mean, I think that's a good example. Mm-hmm. And you're going fine. No. Yeah. And if that's the point, then I'm wondering why we don't have men visit men one-on-one.
I agree with you there.
Mm-hmm.
A problem my husband and I were, just in our relationship, we're having at one time, he spoke up and made a very succinct comment. You have a support system, and you've been a bishop by that.
Yeah, as
but
a visiting.
I don't
as
have
a
anyone I can go to.
Agree. And I think the assumption is they don't need anyone to go to.
Well, and that's our whole society.
And it's wrong, yeah.
It's taught that men can't cry, men can't have meetings, they've got to be this big, strong, macho thing, which is what our whole society has done, but not just the church.
Yeah. I've been told that's it. Time's up. Thank you, though.
Thank you. Officially, your time's up. If people want to continue to talk, they can. The recording is a 60-minute. And you can buy a recording of this session from Sunstone. Do you get money from that? She doesn't get any money from that. Sunstone does. Anyway, if you want to continue talking about this, there'll be a few minutes before the next group kicks us out.